Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
With Dr. Lara Greaves this morning. Kia ora, Lara. How are you today?
Well, Emma, I'm in beautiful Sydney.
Oh, lovely. How's it looking?
Managed to get out of New Zealand, so very good.
Nice.
No offense, New Zealand.
Hey, we've been stuck here for a wee while, so I can understand that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something very specifically New Zealand, though, to start us off. Co-governance. This has been a very hot-button topic recently. You could argue it's been maybe the hot-button topic of New Zealand's colonial history. What does actually co-governance mean, Lara? And then let's talk about the way people are addressing it in politics right now. But what does it mean?
Oh, look, it so depends on what you're talking about. So if you're talking about what in sort of Western thought are assets or resources, such as rivers or maunga or similar, then you're talking about just having, say, like a committee and Māori make up a good chunk of that committee and help lead decisions on those natural resources or ancestors, depending on your thinking of what exactly a river is. And so that's been pretty straightforward, and I think even National and ACT have been like, yeah, we like that, that's cool.
Yeah.
Then what we're moving to is trying to figure out how to do co-governance for, like, social service, health service delivery, and that's what the Independent Māori Health Authority kind of gets to.
Mm-hmm.
And this current report has kind of suggested potentially going for education and for other areas. And then we can kind of look at co-governance on this, like, broader level, and that's things like that Mātiki Mai and the constitutional conversation that from back 2013 that was government-led, what they have suggested, and that's where we start to think about, okay, we've had our seven Māori seats, but those don't necessarily have as much teeth as, say, like a Māori upper house would have or something similar. So that's when we start to look at what are the potential mechanisms in our democratic process, overall constitutionally, national fabric-wise, but also around the policy-making process. So it's there's so many different things that we could be talking about and productive conversations, but instead we're talking about, oh, no, it's scary.
Yeah, so let's talk about that then. Where are we at in this current political conversation? Which part of that broad series of interpretations of co-governance are we actually hearing discussed at the moment, and in what ways are we hearing it discussed?
Well, we've got this weird learned helplessness, and this popped up in the Mātauranga Māori and Science debate as well, where you have a group of people who are like, oh, I don't know what co-governance is. And we had these guys saying, they're mainly guys, everyone, talking about Mātauranga Māori going, oh, we don't know what it is. And actually, a wonderful colleague and friend of mine, Jade LeGrice, senior lecturer, Dr. Jade LeGrice at the University of Auckland, tweeted, well, you know, I've just been down the hallway. And it is kind of like that you can actually learn from just literally Googling it. So we've kind of had this, like, oh, no, this frozen, like, oh, no, what is it kind of view. And that's been distracting from the debate, I have to say, for people that could just Google it. And so that's been a bit annoying. I'd say that it's moved to a lot more productive in tone since Judith Collins was rolled as leader.
Mm-hmm.
So Christopher Luxon's more talking about things such as localism and devolution, which, again, are actually really vague terms.
Yeah.
You know, if co-governance is vague, those are vague terms too. And so that's, I think, more productive as talking about, you know, like that you would want some kind of co-governance on that local level. However, again, he's been using those buzzwords, and we haven't actually seen necessarily media challenge him on that. David Seymour's just doing the same classic David Seymour stuff.
Yeah.
So he's just doing the same stuff. And then from Labour, we haven't necessarily seen anything very concrete. I think it's just been that same thing of, we're going to consult with Māori, we're going to consult with Māori, we're going to consult with Māori. We've seen a document based on the Māori consultation released.
Mm-hmm.
They held a lot of workshops in December and January, which I think I was invited to a few of them, but like no one's going to go to workshops in December and January. And like, thankfully people did go.
Yeah.
Good on them. But it's just Labour's kind of got this like death by consultation process with Māori on everything. And of course it's nice to be asked, but we do have that brilliant, like, whakapapa of the fort of co-governance, Mātiki Mai, and that constitutional conversation. So, yeah, that's kind of like Labour's not necessarily talking about concrete steps, but we're still talking about consultation. You know, we're still at that phase in the whole process.
Well, let's talk a wee bit about, we're going to come to National in a minute, but let's talk a wee bit about big report that we're seeing this week. This is the Climate Change Adaption Plan from the government. It's out for consultation at the moment. This is looking at sort of 6 years and how we mitigate and start to adapt our coastlines, how we prepare for things like wildfires and extreme weather conditions, which we're already seeing. You know, the flooding that we've seen a lot of in the last 2 years is climate change. What is your first thoughts when you see what we've been put out by the government this week?
Well, there's kind of three key areas. One's around reforming institutions to be fit for climate change. One's kind of around data for all, which kind of got my data nerd like, was like, ooh, yay, data. Mm. And then the third one is about embedding climate change adaption in government policies, which is kind of important planning going forward, because we're always frustrated about how short policy planning is, so that's kind of positive. I think that generally it feels bleak that we have to do something like this, but it's clear that we have to. And I would encourage people to have a look at it sooner rather than later if they're passionate about these issues and want to have their say, because it closes in early June. So it's kind of quite a quick process.
Yeah.
But it's all very accessible and just all up there online. You've got this short video of James Shaw talking, and it does feel a bit bleak, but realistic and something that is quite well needed.
Mm. And what, I mean, we have been increasingly, I think, slowly starting to hear people, when we talk about the flooding, for example, we're starting to hear more, you know, dots being joined about this being a climate change issue. But are we there yet on really having that discussion? Because there still seems to be quite a big focus on, all right, there's an immediate crisis, let's deal with that, rather than talking about the overarching crisis that's leading to these kind of, you know, moments in time. What is your thought around the way we're having this conversation?
Oh, it is that thing of, even the release of this, the media release and the report was completely buried by other things. So it's, you know, there's very little content even out there on this plan, and if you were not watching for it or particularly interested in it, it wouldn't be something that would grab your attention. And that's a real shame, because that, again, when we go back to that consultation idea, is it then becomes the same people submitting on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's one of those things where, and I've got students who are doing masters and similar on these sorts of topics, and our conversations always end up at the very bleak point of saying, well, we don't have time. Like, we'll get there, but we also don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the really tricky thing. And it's like, it's not clear what will get us to that point of getting there sooner. And
and
potentially those floods in your backyard are more likely to. But then that also really flicks back to how politicians are framing it. And I think that we, in our political discourse, I mean, I've been following the Australian election quite intensely, but in our political discourse, we have more of the... I think we're a little bit more realistic, even on our political right. So I think we have that going for us.
Mm.
But it's just a huge challenge. And like again, I'll just use the word bleak again, but bleak.
Mm. Well, speaking of our political right, let's have a bit of a chat about National's policy framings around tax and spending, because that's been their big kōrero in the last wee while. It's also arguably always their big kōrero. What's going on with the way we're hearing Christopher Luxon's National, discuss these issues?
Yeah, so we first saw over the weekend on New Subnation, Nicola Willis did a great interview with Simon Shepherd, and she was actually quite stuck and kind of had great answers and was really quite, you know, it flowed very well. It was like, okay, this woman's very impressive. And what it comes back to there is, I think for a woman in the National Party, you do need to, and what the academic literature shows is that women are disadvantaged in terms of economic policy and foreign policy in voters' eyes, so I can see why she'd want to get that experience there, because she will at some point probably run for leader, right? So we saw her interview, and then we saw Luxon trip up on a few things on Q&A, and then later with Tova, and just through media this week. But basically they're going back to that classic idea that, you know, they will decrease taxes, so National equals lower taxes, Labor equals more spending, more taxes. Like, they're trying to really play that card. And I think that pretty much time and time again, whenever we poll voters tend to think that National equals economy, Labor equals health and social services, social goods kind of spending.
Mm.
So that's That's just that classic base that they're trying to go back to. And I think that really, realistically, if you look at Luxon and you look at National Now, is going up against quite a popular two-term government is quite tricky. So I think that the inflation thing is probably their best bet at becoming leaders. And I think this is all against, as well, they've managed to, and I think Simon Bridges is taking credit for this overall in an interview, of framing it as the cost of living crisis. So we've got this crisis of the cost of living. It's not about inequality, which actually
we saw
the journalists like Jack Tame bring it back to inequality and the amount of tax. And actually, that journalists have been doing a great job really bringing it back there. But that they framed it to be about this cost of living crisis for middle New Zealanders. Mm-hmm. So that's where our political debate is sitting and a lot of the focus they're trying to put on there.
Mm.
And that would, if and that's what it seems like to be what a lot of the economists are saying, if our inflation increases quite a bit and interest rates go up and all that kind of thing, then it comes back to being like an economics-based election.
Mm.
And there actually is a scenario under which we don't see a Labour-Greens government after 2023.
It's going to be an interesting year next year for sure. Thank you very much for your time, Lara. Enjoy the rest of your trip in Sydney, and we will chat to you again back in Aotearoa. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
Dr.